Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about the top 10 egg stories of 2024. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. What a year 2024 was, is, will be.
Up and down. Wet and dry.
I mean, it's really been a wild 2 years, but yeah, 2024 had its share of unique things.
In the middle of the year, people are like, oh, this is a year we'll never forget. I had a co-op guy tell me that, and I said, no, this is a year I want to forget.
Right, yeah.
But it ended up being not so bad.
That's the way last year was up until they got their yields, and then like, oh,
right,
yeah, this wasn't so bad.
Yeah, and this year, the yields were just way all over the board.
Right? Oh, yeah.
It was just high and low, and it was quite a year that way.
Yeah.
Definitely a year of extremes, right?
Yep.
Really wet, really dry, good yields, bad yields.
Yeah, a lot of extremes.
Everything in the middle.
It's like a Katy Perry song. You're hot and you're cold. You're yes and you're no.
You're in, then you're out.
Then you're out. You're up and you're down. It's black when it's white. It's wrong when it's right. I think that's as far as
he's acted
go.
Like he doesn't know it.
Yeah, he just really keeps does. Going.
Hey, you helped. Yeah, I missed a part, and you were like, oh, yeah, it's this.
So, we didn't know you were such a Katy Perry fan, Matt.
I know that song. Hers are like sometimes radio earwigs. You can't.
The fireworks song?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, the fireworks song, Roar.
Madagascar didn't help the fireworks song, though, the movie.
That was in there?
Was it then? Yeah. Okay. I don't even remember it being in the movie, to be honest.
It was.
It's so deep embedded, you don't even know.
But. Yes. She's supplanted herself in our brain.
2024 for Todd will not be planted in his brain. He will kick it out.
It was fine. Yeah, no, I don't. It was okay.
We were just glad we got planted in 2020.
Yes.
Fair. Fair point.
So, you guys ready to run down the top 10 here?
Let's do it.
So, at number 10, we've got seed company farewells. So, we've seen consolidation not just this year, but over the span of probably the last 5 to 10 years, really a lot of change in that industry, and this year was no exception with the combination of, what was it, 10 different seed companies into Channel Seed? Or
yes, 10 regional seed brands. Yep. So we kind of did a farewell episode and wished them farewell, but some of them that, you know, some really cool logos, some cool names. For us, some that, you know, has been a staple. So whatever state you're listening to, one of these was a staple for you that you knew well and really liked. And, yeah, really, Matt, since for the last 20 years, so starting in 2004, was when Syngenta bought Garst and Golden Harvest. And that kind of almost started this sort of wave of change, of consolidation and changing brands.
Shrinking circles, just fewer and fewer unique brands out there. And obviously we weren't familiar with all these that have gone into Channel, but Young Seeds being the big one for us here at Wisconsin. But yeah, definitely some history there, and at least for now they're not totally going away. Those varieties to a certain extent will exist under the Channel name, but
at some point they'll phase those out too.
Right, as we've seen with other companies, it just, you can only keep so much. So
I do like when they make those transitions, though, when they give you the comparison chart. So you can, I said that in the episode too, and I'll say it here again. It's nice when you can look back and say, oh, that was the Young's hybrid. Now it's the Channel one.
Yep.
Because you still have those growers that are like, oh, that works so well. How can we?
Just from a business standpoint, it's going to help them.
Yeah.
Like,
didn't we even talk about, like, are you going to show up with your,
right, your
Young's hat,
Channel and vest, channel and your shirt. Channel hat, or your Young's hat, yeah.
Yep.
Or vice versa. Yeah, we talked about proper attire for the transition. All right, moving then on to number 9. soy, not just for tofurkey or your oils anymore, soy-based. Fire suppressant was a big deal earlier this year. So
did you make a tofurkey, Matt?
I did not. Oh, okay. Remember, we were giving Jim a hard time.
We were,
you
yeah.
You should make a tofurkey, but yeah. then fry it in bacon so that it was like the middle ground of bacon grease. Sorry. So not
just like melt.
Does that just rub it in as vegan friends then? Like, oh, here's your tofurkey and bacon juice.
That's a compromise. It's something for everyone. Probably. A little different flavor to it. And
probably tastes damn good, though.
Yeah.
I don't think it would.
Just because of the tofu side.
I don't know.
Bacon
grease
fixes
bacon
can fix a lot of things.
Yes, I agree. I mean, bacon wrapped maybe would.
But not bacon okay. juice.
That would be a weird, weird combination there, I'm sure. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is that from the firefighting perspective, now they have a soy-based fire suppressant that is commercially available and due in part to research funded by U.S. soybean farmers. So the Cross Plains Solution developed their soy foam, the first and only soy-based firefighting foam. So it's free of PFAS, which is a big thing with fire retardant. That's been talked about and will continue to be talked about for a long time, the whole forever chemical debate. So having a more biodegradable option that is effective is good. So it's 84% bio-based. So still not, there's still some things added to it. I don't remember if they mentioned exactly what it is, but 50% of that is soybean meal or flour. Just another way to get soybeans out into the commercial system. So,
well, and with the global market of soybeans being very competitive, this is absolutely an awesome thing, right? Because we have more options for soybean growers to market their beans and have a spot potentially to keep that price where it needs to be if you have more options to sell your product. So that is really actually a really neat thing.
It is cool that PFAS, like you say, is in the news and all that. So this is a good new thing that can change that market a lot. And anytime, like you say, the amount of things that soybeans goes into, corn, but especially soybeans, what it all is made, inks and plastics and
oils
is just unbelievable. And this one that it's going to be used to put out fires is pretty cool. So wonder if you ever like a soybean... Not very often are your soybean bins on fire. Most of the time it's other things on the farm, but
true.
It'd be ironic if you could put it out with soy foam.
Well, I was just going to say, don't just throw soybeans on a fire
yes.
to try to put it out. It does have to be mixed with some other things. I'm not saying you necessarily couldn't smother a fire, small fire with soybeans, but then you're just roasting at that point. So
roaster beans.
All right, moving on to number 8 was another multi-year story. I mean, carried over from last year a little bit. Not as in the news throughout this year as it was the entirety pretty much of last year, but Canadian wildfires were still around in 2024. They had not fully died, which, again, is probably not super surprising as... You know, wildfires are a, I don't want to say a common thing, but something that happens frequently when you get that many acres burning and everything. It's definitely becomes a multi-year issue. So,
In 2013, this was our number 2 ag story of the year.
2023?
Excuse me, yes, 2023.
It's like, sorry, wow, we've been doing this that long? I didn't think we were doing it that long. 2023, number 2.
So basically last year is number 2. This year, that's why it's higher on the list. It really wasn't. Last year was that the smoke was everywhere. And
yeah,
we really didn't
through the season. This year have a couple
like
days,
one or two
think,
times
yeah.
that you sort of noticed it, and it wasn't as bad. But kind of what was interesting was that those fires never really died, actually. It wasn't like new fires. It was just,
yeah, it was just
2023's fires still going.
It was the sequel, yes.
Yes, so.
Be neat to see. how many years, like, you have this big massive acreage get burned, and, like, eventually new life comes, right? Like, that's the whole life cycle, right?
Right. And just how long before it burns again?
Well, but my point is, be curious to know what it looks like in 2 years, three years,
do we know
years.
If they even died this year?
Like, I do not. I mean, we heard less about them, so I imagine they're either better under control, at least, or, you know, they need fuel and everything. Like you said, Bill, they move through, so eventually you know, your fuel source is going to get somewhat dissipated. So I imagine, being that we haven't heard about them, they're probably not as pervasive as they were last year.
So. Yeah, this story is from back in May, so it's...
Yeah.
Hopefully they've had time. Maybe they're using the soy-based firefighting foam.
I'm going to imagine they had a wetter season. I don't know that for sure. So maybe that helped, too, that, you know, the flush of rain we had in that
July. And this was at July time. May time when, like, before right? Well, really, we were getting wet, but they may not have been. Yes. Right.
So that may have helped as well. So
yeah, 1.8 million acres burned in 23.
You got to put your pinky up in
1.8 million acres.
Dun, 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 dun.
Mini me, stop setting the fires.
Mini me would do that
with the laser sharks. All right, moving on then to number 7. This was a little bit more recent and is kind of carried through the latter half of 2024. Poultry processors flying the coop. So there was a big shutdown in the poultry industry, which that industry has been having issues with bird flu through the last couple of years. And so just kind of a rough time there. But Pure Prairie Poultry, say that 10 times fast,
no,
was suddenly shut down, leaving a lot of farmers to scramble. And multiple states, they had issues with feeding because they're reliant on the money they were going to get to from selling these chickens back to Pure Prairie to kind of make a living. So it's just not a great thing. But fortunately, a local Wisconsin student was able to kind of help rehome a lot of these chickens and find a place to go with a number of them before they all ate each other, because chickens are like that. They can be cannibalistic. So
this was a field good Friday.
It was like a both, because early on we talked about, you know, the processor shutting down and how hard that was on those farms, that basically they were stuck with chickens they didn't know what to do with, because you couldn't just butcher all of them yourself, and you couldn't.
Right. It's not your dozen backyard not even, chickens. Well, it's hundreds of thousands.
Right.
Of
and technically, a lot of them weren't even those farmers' chickens. They raised them for them. Yes, they may have been paid. So this story kind of evolved into a lot of different things and had quite a tale for this year.
175,000 birds in this story that needed a home.
Right. So that's a lot of chickens. I don't know if you guys have ever butchered chickens, but
I have.
That I think your arm would fall off after a while trying to get through that many chickens.
I'm trying to think, how many would we normally butcher at a time? Because it would be 10 or 20, yeah, right? It wasn't. Right.
Yeah, I was just saying, I would guess for when my grandma had chickens, it was probably somewhere in the 20 to 30 range.
Yeah. And even that was like a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it was a big day.
Yeah.
A lot of chickens running around with their heads chopped off. Imagine 175,000 of them.
Yeah, you really gain it, and I'm sure I said this during the episode and multiple times, but you really gain an appreciation for that saying when you actually see it.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, and PETA will kill me, but it's hilarious kind of to see this chicken like literally running around without its head cut off, or with its head cut off. Yeah, it's something to see. All right. From there, we'll move into number 6, another story that was fairly recent toward the end of this year, but that is the Illinois Farm Bureau getting expelled. And we should, I don't know, Todd, did you look this up at all? What happened with it? I know, I think it was sometime here in December was the final date for when it was going to go into effect. I think they were still negotiating some things. And
no, they did actually delay the December 20th. So
okay.
Yep. It was supposed to be December 20th, was delayed. So it's still not necessarily like a done,
it's not a done deal.
Deal or anything. And then it's specific to that one state group, to Illinois. Sure. It's not.
Right.
Other state groups are united and basically kind of in move to expel them in a way, too, like over this insurance dispute. But we'll see what happens. So there has been kind of some more news on this, and it continues to be something that
it's a developing story.
Yes. Yeah, it is. So this one could move into 2025, into the new year.
I do kind of have to laugh at the irony. I remember seeing I think it was a tweet or something, maybe it was on Facebook from a guy who posted the story, and he's like, yep, Illinois Farm Bureau kicked me out in whatever, like a couple of years ago or whatever, and he was enjoying his... what he saw is their comeuppance of
okay,
yeah, they put me they out now they're getting kicked out. So yeah, but obviously it's a matter between those two parties, the National Farm Bureau organization and the state of Illinois. So there's, if they delayed the decision, then hopefully there's still a chance for them to work things out. But yeah, you never know. Just like our political engine, the things don't always work out the way you think they will. So, all right, moving on then to number five, hitting the halfway point here of our top 10. We've got the National Weather Service changing warnings, and this late fall, early winter, we saw this go into effect with the loss of the wind chill factor and really becoming a cold weather advisory.
Was very confused a couple weeks ago when we got that really cold blast of air. I'm like, what are we calling this now? Like,
yep,
it's really windy and really cold, but I can't call it wind chill warning. I'm confused.
Yeah, we had those, it was like 2 days of quite cold weather, and then experienced our first cold weather advisory due to the wind factor, which... yeah, it's still because of wind. We just don't call it wind chill. It's even in the definition of the cold weather advisory is wind chill or temperature of.
The more we use the new, because I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's just a new term. It doesn't matter. But the more we use the new thing, I'd rather just go back to wind chill because it's
more straightforward.
Just, yeah, right? And I get it that it's not just about the wind, but.
Right.
I know some places call it real feel or have all kinds of names for it, but
yep.
We all knew it as that. Everybody still kind of seems to be...
Right, whatever. Like, regardless of whether it's wind or actual temperature, if it's negative 20, it's probably...
Then it's just cold, you don't even need to worry about it. But
that's probably where this comes in, right? If it's negative 20 without a wind, there's no wind chill. But it's an extreme cold watch or in a cold weather advisory.
Yeah, when you get really down there... which I think it's funny, we go to advisory, watch, and warning. And we saw that even in our last snowstorm, the big, what did they name that snowstorm?
Asher.
Asher, yes.
Well, that was the Fox 11 name.
Fox 11 name, yeah.
Because
it was the first one.
It was the first
one. Sometimes I think it
wasn't even really a...
No, yeah. Well, they named it beforehand. So that too seems odd.
Which I mean, they do that with hurricanes too, and yeah. Some of them never become hurricanes. That's why.
True.
That's why it jumps around a little bit because why we had Helene and Milton. It's like, well, there's a lot of letters between H and M.
It did last a long time though. I mean, it started.
Yeah, it was a slow
9 a.m. and by 13, 14 hours later, it was still hanging on.
I just remember I went out and shoveled after dinner sometime and wasn't really a lot yet.
No.
At night, and then the next morning wasn't a ton either. It was some wind overnight because you could see a little bit of
it drifting a bit,
and stuff, but nothing.
But it wasn't one of those storms where, yeah, it was definitely one where they overpredicted, and then when it came, you're just like, oh, this isn't so bad.
I didn't use my snowblower. I mean, I could have probably with the snowplow.
Mine just for the snowplow, and even that was a little
But it wasn't
weak.
Really.
Well, you guys in town, like my whole driveway was drifted with about 6-8 inches. I don't think we got that much, but 6-8 inches, so I think it was worth me getting it out because it would have took me 3 times as long to shovel.
But yeah, I remember watching because at that time it was like we went from a winter storm warning to a winter storm advisory. So I think they're just kind of trying to consolidate and use the same terminology throughout. Like everything's going to be either an advisory, a watch, or a warning because we have tornado warnings, tornado watches.
Right.
I don't remember if we've ever had tornado advisories, but I'm sure that'll be the next thing is you're in a tornado advisory.
It does say for them to name a snowstorm. Guess how many inches it's got to be?
6.
Like forecasted.
6.
What do you think, Matt?
I'm going to say 5 or more.
Yeah, it's 5. Oh. I thought like 6 too. Like yeah. You gotta,
6 is more than 5.
I just thought it would have been like you need to be. If you get 6 inches of snow, that's got some issues. Usually like 4 or 5. You're like, yeah, it's okay, but.
It's that last inch that really makes the difference.
It says they can also give a name if strong winds or whiteouts could happen. So
yeah, like snow squalls. Which is another new term that we've used quite a bit in the last year and a half or so. But all right, moving on then from number 5 to number 4, a new record soybean yield was achieved, 218 bushels to the acre.
It's a pretty damn good corn yield, Matt.
It is. Georgia farmer Alex Harrell had crushed his own record of 206 bushel with 218. So not only did he break his record, but that's two years in a row, so back-to-back years, 206 being last year and two years ago, then 218 this past year. I don't know what he got this fall. But a 34-year-old farmer who farms about 4,000 acres with his father, Rodney, in Lee and Sumter counties, which is north of Albany, Georgia, not New York, raises corn, soybeans, wheat, and watermelons, and pushes his yield on every acre. They were Pioneer Z-Series beans planted at 110,000 seed per acre with a final stand of about 105. So when you think about what we're doing...
That ain't much different.
Right. We're right in there. We're probably planting a little bit more in general because guys, I mean, remember when we were planting like 200,000 seeds?
Oh yeah. When I started, I had a guy planting 280,000 seeds.
That is a lot.
Now, granted, they weren't treated, and that was 20 years ago. Right. But imagine that. That's more than double this rate.
Yeah, I remember talking guys down from over 200, you know, like...
It was like going to 180 was pulling a guy's arm off. Like,
I paid for myself on that farm that one first year. I'm like, dude, let's drop 100,000 off of here. And
right.
Yeah.
They were growing a little different relative maturity
than what we're absolutely used to.
They're almost like triple us.
Right. Well, it is Georgia. I mean,
yes.
You can't get much further south.
But yes, a 4.9 bean.
It's a good advertisement for the Z-Series.
Is that the height or the maturity rate?
Both.
Just to get that as many pods as you need to get 218 bushel. Bet you it was...
The picture doesn't... I mean, we got beans just as tall.
Yeah, I mean, they look waist high, but they're also senesced and who knows how lodged they are.
Yeah, and they probably got triple the pods on them.
Because that's one thing with soybeans. You can have 4 foot tall soybeans, but they're never going to look it in the field because they...
No.
They can't support. It's not like a corn stalk.
Right.
Can't support that weight.
Yeah, I don't know how tall Rodney and Alex Harrell are, but it's just waist high. They don't look anything super special, really. They look nice, but you wouldn't say 200-some bushel.
But yeah, good for them. I mean, it's definitely, I think, a different growing environment where they are. Like you said, maturity rate's different. Growing season's different. Yeah, just a lot of different factors there, but it is kind of cool to see that the plants can be pushed like that. So we'll see where he goes in the future, see if he can break his record for a third year in a row, a I'm sure he's got his yields in, but I haven't looked up to see if anything has been reported yet. So from there, we'll move to number three, which is the, as mentioned before, hurricanes that went through in the south and may have affected the Harrells down in Georgia. We had Hurricane Helene and then Milton, which didn't make it as far north, but hit Florida this past year. And Helene was particularly nasty, how far inland it went, cutting a pretty big swath of damage. And fortunately, there were a number of people willing to help out and do what they could to help the folks that lived in the affected areas. And some of those were farmers who brought in their equipment and helped deliver supplies to those in need. And in particular, there were some farms that brought their drones in. So not just little drones, which you might see buzzing around New Jersey, but big ag drones that could carry a payload. So Russell Hedrick being one of them, along with his father and others from his area of North Carolina, moved to the west and helped in the Asheville area to find stranded individuals, deliver supplies. They were using actually a combination of big and little drones. So they had a thermal drone to help look for survivors and using a DJI T-40 application drone to drop off supplies. So just always a good thing to see people, and there were farmers from North Carolina, Alabama, Florida, even Wisconsin's mentioned, folks headed down and helped. I know there were relief efforts going on all across the country to help these folks out. So, and it's going to be a long road to recovery. So,
yeah, that's too bad. You know, a lot of times after a natural disaster, everybody else quickly forgets around you.
Right.
There's still people cleaning up from this. And
oh, yeah.
How farmers are affected, you know, in Georgia and Florida, and then even into North Carolina where you got Christmas tree farms, you know, just totally wrecked. And we've talked about that. And
yep. Even pecan production was affected. And those, that's not easy to recover from. We had a gentleman stop in the office who is, I was talking to a few weeks ago, who was familiar with pecans, and he said, yeah, it's like a 10 to 12 year investment before that tree is going to be able to produce. So,
yikes.
Yeah, you're talking a decade or more of work to just return to existing production. Obviously, I'm sure they have diversified ranges that maybe all weren't hit, but still, it's a big loss for a lot of those folks.
As we talk about these top three, they were very hard to pick out which, you know, if you were in those areas, this is number one to them, right, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
So, like, that's what's tricky. Like, these top three are, to me, are all number ones. They're all the same.
All right. Moving on then to number two, was something that we talked about throughout the season and didn't see a lot of change in until recently toward the end of the year here, and that is the low commodity prices, low grain prices, hit their lowest levels since 2020. And this one was, what time of year did we talk about this? So we started talking about it
about in July,
24 episodes ago. So
yeah, no, it was kind of it did sort of slowly happen, but fast at the same time. We're all sitting.
Well, and I think it hit differently, right? Because the dairymen are having a decent year. The milk is good,
right?
But all of our cash cropper guys, you can really tell as the season went on, and we had like high hopes to get the inputs out there. And then as the season went on, I was like, yeah. They started tightening their belt a little bit. Nah, I don't want to do that. Grain prices aren't good. Not going to stick money into it. And then we had the late season. So it's like, well, now we got late plantings and we just don't have a good outlook. So maybe we should cut back on expense because we just don't know what our income will be.
It was a tough spring to get stuff planted and just challenging that way, that it was almost like you didn't notice the prices falling off
And you were more. Sure. You were so concerned right, about planting,
just getting the crop yeah. in, and yeah. then yeah. By the time you know July hit, and it was, it just kept going, and you figured too well, not a lot of people got planted, so prices will go up, and that never really happened either. So it was a tough year for grain. You know, it's not a year that way where you know if you've got livestock on your you know or any animals like we said dairy or beef or whatever, all those prices are pretty strong. So just one of those tough years where it's tough on the sort of grain guys, but okay on the livestock, or good on the livestock right. guys or guys with animals.
Yeah, and that export leg did start to pick up a little bit toward the end of the year here, but just, yeah, overall a very downward trend for a good chunk of the season here. So, all right, we've done 9 out of 10, so now... Rolling in at number one, our Midwest flooding. So, as we've kind of mentioned before in this episode and talked about all growing season, we had some very wet periods during that kind of mid to late May, June, July time period where made things very difficult to get planted. Even if you did get planted, sometimes you didn't see the emergence you wanted because the field stayed underwater. You know, you might have been able to sneak in, but you know, the constant water was affecting stands. It was affecting plants, affecting yields by the time we got to the end of the season where it's not kind of a roller coaster looking yield map in the field where you'd be hitting highs and lows within, you know, short periods of time moving through the field. Just a very... very odd year, big change from what we saw in the dry period we experienced in 2023 in that kind of same time frame. So
yeah, the number one story of 2023 was the drought.
Right.
And the number one story of 2024 was the wet. So
yeah.
It just goes to show we could have all our plans, all our ducks in a row, have the best equipment, and Mother Nature says, psych. And... Yeah. Well, this throws us a curveball, right?
And this year with the bookend drought, I mean, it was dry leading up to that period, extremely wet, and then dry toward the end of the season. So it was just kind of a weird...
Yeah, for how you dubbed the bookend drought, man, I like that. And even going into the year, all the meetings, you know, up until even April, but March for sure, it was predicted to be the drought will worsen or be basically
the same,
not change. Yeah. Okay. And then all of a sudden when it flipped, it really flipped, and you just kind of were, because all that was predicted that way, I think a lot of us felt like we got caught with our pants down that way, like this was not what we were expecting at all.
Right, no.
Or we would have pushed people to plant earlier, quicker.
Even if we look back at our episodes, the end of last year, beginning, you know, we were talking about if we see dry conditions, you know, what are we going to expect, or what to expect and all that. And
if you remember the... Forge Council annual meeting in February was all about is this dry going to extend and how do we manage through no soil moisture, because we were dealing, you know, we felt like 2023 we survived because of the soil moisture, and now if we go into 24 without any, how are we going to do that? And then May
happened. How many farmers that were at the Forge Council meeting went home and either hauled manure or did tillage,
right? You could do a lot of stuff, you're calling this the bookend drought thing is great because it may maybe to emphasize the drought part too much that you miss how wet it was in the middle, but it was really dry, and then we got really dry late. One episode listening back was retired DTN meteorologist Dale Raymakers. He did kind of, when we were talking drought, he, you know, obviously he said it was gonna be there, but he said it. I forgot what the shift was, La Nina, El Nino thing.
Yeah.
And he kind of made it sound like it won't, you know, I don't think he predicted it to be that wet, but it was definitely like...
He wasn't expecting a drought.
No, it was just like, no, you know, everything kind of goes back to sort normal or the mean or whatever, that way it averages out.
Well, and in hindsight, when you look back at what California experienced last year, where they just kind of had that system sit over them and then they stayed wet, it's kind of... It's not exactly, I don't think we had near the amount of water necessarily that they did, but a similar effect of where we just kind of sat in this holding pattern of wet. It just, you know, it kind of makes some sense that it moves across the country. We've seen the same thing with drought. You know, certain areas are droughty and kind of shifts through. So, yeah, it's makes you question everything about next year. It's like, I don't even know what to say.
Don't even try.
Nope. Yeah. I don't. Right. It makes you realize that. Obviously, we know weather prediction isn't very good long. You know, it can predict it somewhat, but you just do what you can do when you can do it. So that, as growers talking about like goals for 2025, it was funny. One of them was just like, just plant. Like, that's my goal. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to plant. Yeah,
be able to plant.
Yeah, and like maybe probably plant a little wetter than maybe what they're used to, which is a little different. But yeah, just kind of change that up and just plant. So that's a very, yeah, hopefully we achieve that goal in 2025.
Well, it's kind of like cutting hay, even where, you know, you look at you should look at the forecast, have an expectation, but sometimes you just got to do what you got to do because you know you're not going to affect it. And you might miss a window by being too conservative, but at the same time, you don't want to just always charge ahead and go either. But
right.
It makes us strive for soil resiliency. I think that's
absolutely
very important.
All right. So there's our top 10. There are a few honorable mentions that didn't make the list. I'll just kind of run down a couple of them quick. We've got Kubota Farm Robot. That was a recent one we talked about. It's a winning concept at CES. Some new AI tech coming to farms. It'll help connect the farm data dots. New corn rootworm biologicals are out there. So we're always talking about different new chemical combinations or even new modes of action coming out. And this one was more of a rootworm-specific thing because we've seen those traits kind of tail off for the last few years. Sticky bug traps to help catch bugs. Tar spot is a somewhat of an evergreen issue that, you know, we talk about and always want to be prepared for. New research going on there that might help us better be equipped to combat that particular disease. And then we had the local calf delivery where a UPS driver driving by a farm was able to help deliver a calf and had the probably delivery of a lifetime for him as far as here's your package and yeah, there's a new baby out there for you. And finally, weed-killing robot dog. So we've seen the increase in robotics and interest in that field. So now you could have a robo-pup, I guess, out in the fields helping you control your weeds. Maybe we can combine some See and Spray technology and put a little sprayer on them, too. But so, yeah, always lots of interesting things going on, and that's our kind of wrap up here for 2024 as far as ag stories go. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.